Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. This is broadcast number 592, April the 11th, 1983. And we will begin last week and the week before. I forgot to update you on what was happening a year ago today. Now, every year annually, I remind you it's income tax season. You know how that goes. And almost every year I've read on the air my letter to the Director of Internal Revenue going back April 15th, 1972. So you know I've been in it a long time. If you want a copy of this letter, the entire letter, you can write to me. I didn't put it on the sheet that goes out this week. If you don't have it, it's from broadcast number 539 a year ago last week. And I'll update what we did a year ago tonight. In essence, what I said to the Director of Internal Revenue, that was 11 years ago, to support the existing government in any way is to give approval to legalized murder and assassinations of our former president, John F. Kennedy, Reverend Martin Luther King, and Senator Robert Kennedy. The National Archives contains proof of the conspiracy to kill the president. $60 and $80 million budget for the archives pays for a classifying system that conceals from these citizens what's really taking place. I said the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms through the Treasury and Internal Revenue hire convicts eligible for parole to commit crimes when they are released. I hear the chimes outside, so I'll say it's KAZUFM because on the hour I might have forgotten that. Okay. In the letter 11 years ago, I said the government through alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, which is the Treasury that collects our money, they kill labor leaders, they kill civil rights leaders, they plant evidence, they infiltrate organizations, prime targets are blacks and Chicanos. That was back 11 years ago. Now it's millionaires and people even from the intelligence system. Then I asked for a refund in May of 1982, and I asked for it every year, a refund of taxes. This year I didn't pay any. I live a life of poverty now. I don't make money, and I just barely get along. You see, I don't sell the tapes. I don't sell broadcasts. I do articles, but it doesn't equal my expenses. So I didn't pay the government a cent this year, and I gave them a lot more than if I paid the money. I gave them more, okay? But I don't, this is the first year I haven't had to give them anything, but I've requested refunds. And in the request going back those years, I talked about Vietnam as a major sickness. The country had a coup d'etat in 1962. The Treasury Department, I went in some more about funding the Treasury Department. To pay them is to dig our own graves. And I went into our Nazi, racist, barbarian behavior. This was long before Klaus Barbie surfaced as working for the United States government, which was just this year. I was saying this 11 years ago to support this system with my taxes is identical to the fools in Nazi Germany who bought their own gas chambers. And I put in a request for a refund, and they sent me a letter, November 24th, 1972. The claim for refund is disallowed. Your reasons given on your claim for refund are denied. Now, interestingly enough, when I wrote that in 1972, April 72, it was 2 months before the Watergate arrest, and G. Gordon Liddy and Mr. Caulfield and the various Watergate teams and Robert Mardian. Mardian was down the basement seeing the Nazi archives, the Gestapo pictures. Liddy, with his German Nazi fixation complex, was going around wanting to kill various people and had plans and had been involved in various dirty tricks for the federal government, FBI, and Treasury Department that he worked with. And Mr. Caulfield was threatening to kill James McCord 2 months later, and the Dorothy Hunt plane went down. And they were working in the Treasury Department, Liddy and McCord, and Caulfield and a whole bunch of others that later were identified by name, but I was accusing them as being Nazis and assassins. And then Watergate came, and that exposed the team raw right at that time. A year ago last week, I didn't update. I was talking about the Japanese experiments and Carl Weidenbach, the German who uses the name Charles Willoughby, who worked for General MacArthur in the Pacific. And now I've located Weidenbach in Dallas, Texas. And I'll do more on Weidenbach. I brought up the experiments of Americans and his permission to do that in Manchuria at the end and during World War II, experimenting and freezing and shooting Americans. That was just a year ago last week. And a year ago tonight, April the 4th, 1982, I was talking about Antarctica and the politics because of the Falkland War with Great Britain, the politics of James Forrestal and various Americans down in Antarctica, Admiral Byrd, the Nazi stations, the use of Antarctica for a war which would be inevitable, that it would be the launching base for World War III. And just a year ago tonight, I said Secretary of State Alexander Haig is at his happiest and best. He was with Mrs. Thatcher in London, smiling. And then a day later, he was with Argentine president. Well, Haig was fired right after he was flying back and forth between Argentine and London. Haig was fired. And I know that he's the vicar of Washington was numero uno traitor. Well, that's a hard one. There's Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger in the gang. But it was about Haig's deception and so-called peace in the Falklands and his role with Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer. And as I say, just a week after that or so, Haig was fired. And I referred to that book, The UFO, The Nazi Secret Weapon. Some of you have it. Many of you do. Some of you don't. Very important to read about the Nazi bases down in Antarctica and what the fighting was about. That was just a year ago this week and a year ago last week. Now, interesting this week, a friend, World Watcher listener, I don't think she wants me to use her name on the air. She calls KGO and uses Josephine, so you'd know who it is. Has shortwave radio, listens every single night, tape records it. And this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, going over shortwave, I heard the broadcast, April the 9th, 1983, on the weekend, quotations from a magazine called Trude, T-R-U-D, Radio Moscow. And this is what they were saying, and this goes all over the world. The role of the CIA is gradually becoming clear in the shooting of the Pope. The CIA was directly involved. At least one member of the agency monitored the final stages of Ajah's movements. That was Frank Turple. Now, about a year before, I referred to a broadcast, and many of you saw it, January the 11th, 1982. And you can get the transcript of this broadcast. It was called Confessions of a Dangerous Man. The transcript is $2. Public Broadcasting, 125 Western Avenue, Boston, Massachusetts, 02134. If I'm going too fast, you can write to me or call me for that information. But I sent for a transcript of Frank Turple talking about his activities. And one of the things he said, the narrator said, that Turple was absent from the court. He had fled the country and wasn't showing up for his hearings. But Turple made a tape in which he described his links with an astonishing assortment of individuals and organizations, including the CIA, the Scotland Yard, the Turkish Grey Wolves who trained Mehmet Ajah, the man who shot the Pope, Colonel Gaddafi, the Libyan head of state, and Mr. Ramirez Sanchez, known as Carlos the Jackal, S-A-N-C-H-E-Z. He is close to Idi Amin of Uganda and Emperor Bokassa, B-O-K-A-S-S-A, another fellow active in terror and greed in Africa. So a year ago, a little over a year ago in 2 months, Frank Turple was talking about Ajah. And just this weekend, the Soviet Union, I guess, has said we've had enough already of the Bulgarian connection. We have evidence that Frank Turple was monitoring in charge of Ajah up to the moment that he shot the Pope. Now, that was shortwave radio from Europe on Saturday. Friday, April the 7th, the Wall Street Journal had an editorial, large one, called The Spy Wars. And it goes into the fact that now we know for sure that while we thought the CIA was under everybody's bed and doing all kinds of terrible things, it was the KGB. And the Wall Street Journal said the Pope plot was hatched in the nightmarish milieu of gun running, drug smuggling, penetrating Western institutions by enemy agents, unwitting collaborators. Claire Sterling tried to say in her terror network about this operation, and now it turns out that the KGB has penetrated terrorism that has plagued Italy and so forth. It's a long article on the KGB, the Russians, the shooting of the Pope. And all this time, in spite of the Wall Street Journal and their editorials and editorials from all over the world and Marvin Kalb and NBC, in spite of all of them, the fact remains that Wilson, Turple, and Korkula and Murder Incorporated and the Central Intelligence Agency wanted the Pope shot. They probably wanted, as Licio Gelli said, and he was about to be arrested and the Masonic scandal was going to break open in Italy. What they wanted was to have a network that would make Ajambi linked to the KGB. And they said, this is an act of war, and let Ajambi out of prison if he would smear these various people. Well, that doesn't work, and time will reverse all of the propaganda that these people have been dishing out for years and years. And speaking of dishing out, I got a call last night from somebody in the East. I will feel free to give you the name on the air probably by next week, but I promised I wouldn't now. Somebody has been in Lebanon with Frank Turpel, and Turpel is squealing about the murder of John Kennedy. And those of you that have had the patience to listen to me for 11 years, this is the 12th year, or 6, or 1, or whatever. Yeah, it's a really nice in your lifetime to know that you did a job and did it well. It took a while. It took 20 years of research, but I laid the network for you. And the American connections, one of them, if you go back to the back tapes I had on Theodore Shackley, he came over from Germany, went to Miami, and hired the anti-Castro Cubans, and he brought in the Young Americans for Freedom that were with General Walker and this Colonel Willoughby and Robert Morris in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and the H.L. Hunt and the Murchisons, and there were oil people, there were the monarchy, the deposed monarchy, the czars, there was the organized crime syndicate, there was the military intelligence and the FBI of Division 5, William Sullivan and J. Edgar Hoover. But Theodore Shackley was a major operator. Edwin Wilson was a paymaster for the Bay of Pigs, as was E. Howard Hunt. Hunt's connection is with the Buckley brothers, with William and James Buckley, notorious murderous Odessa team, and Corkless supply silencers and guns. And I believe you'll find it within a very short time that the silencers at Dealey Plaza came from Mitchell Werbel's operation. And this whole team have been the notorious killers for the American CIA, setting up headquarters, the Nugent Hand Bank later during the Vietnam War, combining our own narcotics, our killing, and working just as the Vatican and the Italian government and the various people, many from France and other governments who went to South America, like Claus Barbie. The game is gun running, narcotics, and fascism, death squads, and so forth. We had our coup in Dallas, 1963, so it isn't even the 20th anniversary of the murder of John Kennedy, and everything, every little thread that I've tied together or connected should all be in place on the anniversary, and I don't think I'll wait till November 22nd, 1963 to talk about this, but maybe each week, next week, 15 minutes on new evidence or information on who killed John Kennedy. So you can put it together every week and see how this country was overthrown. We can, once we recognize we have this dictatorship, get rid of it. The first thing is to understand who it is and what it is, and how do you know it when you look it in the eye. Now, the rest of the broadcast this evening, for the next 45 minutes, I'm going to talk about Helene Von Dahm, because this is the month where the confirmation hearings take place in Washington, D.C., and I called Washington, D.C. and got the telephone number of the person to contact there. If you have a pencil, write it down. Oh, I didn't bring the office number. You'll have to call the house and get that. I have the office address that you can write to Washington, D.C. for the hearings and appointment. Oh, it is Mr. Burke, B-E-R-K, 202, area code 202-224-3121. I called there today. He didn't return the call, probably because I left the message. But he's in charge of the investigation or taking messages on the confirmation hearing of Helene Von Dahm for the nomination to be the ambassador to Vienna. Now, the hearings are the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Hart Office Building, Washington, D.C., 20515. Now, the members of that committee, you won't have time to write those down. Send me a self-addressed stamped envelope like you did for that one Odessa chart or other information that you want on these broadcasts. Send a self-addressed stamped envelope or go to your library and get a list of members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. The chairman is Charles Percy of Illinois, and Helene Von Dahm worked in Chicago campaigning for him. He's the extension, the Illinois extension of the Rockefeller syndrome, and Nelson Rockefeller and Chase Manhattan brought in the Nazi war criminals, described so well in the Belarus, the story of John Loftus, of the Nazis, Mr. Wiesner of the CIA, Frank Wiesner, and Richard Nixon and Nelson Rockefeller. And Charles Percy is an extension of them, and that was one of the offices that she campaigned for him in Illinois. So I've put in a letter to the various members of the Senate Foreign Relations that he really should not vote on her appointment to Vienna, even if he doesn't remember her, because they get a sudden loss of memory when they have a conflict of interest. Another man on the committee is Senator Jesse Helms. He's the one person practically in the Congress who has held against signing the genocide treaty. He has a love affair with the Nazis, so when you write to him, it's worth the 20 cents, but you won't make much headway. And then there's others, Senator Lugar, Mathias, Nancy Kassenbaum, Larry Pressler, Rudy Boschwitz, Senator Christopher Dodd, there, Claiborne Pell, Mr. Paul Tsongas, Alan Cranston, Paul Sarbanes. There's a list of them from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Just send me a self-addressed stamped envelope. I'll give you their name, address, and we can write and get on that. Now, I want to go into the background of Helene von Damme. Why am I afraid of having her ambassador to Vienna? Why is this a thing that I think should be investigated? She hardly is qualified for anything that she's done up till now, and yet she's going to move on to another promotion. Now, when I say people are in the Odessa, how do you know them? What is the Odessa? What is the terrible Odessa? I referred to of Otto Skorzeny and Martin Bormann's network. Well, David Emery reminded me, and it's in the book on the life of Otto Skorzeny by Infield, the conclusion of the book, The World of Skorzeny, this is the way Mr. Infield closes the book. He tells how Skorzeny's ashes were flown over native Vienna. Maybe she wants the karma of Skorzeny going back there. He died July 7th, 1975. And this is what Mr. Infield says. He says, Skorzeny and his commandos during the Third Reich worked. They set up the Odessa, O-D-E-S-S-A, those members, and they were, for the post-war years after the war, the leaders in modern-day terrorist tactics all over the world. His methods were used. The IRA, the PLO, the SLA, the Biedermannhof, and these all go to the CIA that hired Skorzeny, and all these operations were funded and formed by the CIA, the Black Liberation Army, and so forth. He said the violence and brutality of Skorzeny's actions during the Hitler era have been well documented and are known throughout the world. And this is true, just as Klaus Barbie's were. In the long run, however, it is his clandestine activities with the Odessa after the Third Reich that has the greatest effect, and it will continue into your future. His determination not to allow members of the SS to forget their oath of allegiance to Hitler and to the Führer's principles is the legacy that Skorzeny left. To organize them into smooth, functioning, efficient group was a master stroke. The Odessa is undoubtedly one of the most dangerous threats to man's freedom today. Remember, I talked about Mr. Bluedorn of Gulf and Western, or Mr. Peter Drucker, or Henry Kissinger, or Fritz Kramer as being Odessa, tapped into the Odessa. He says, the organization keeps a low profile. It's successful. It's surreptitious. Members gain their objectives by being unnoticed by the public. That's why we have to put the light of day to these people, unnoticed by the public. And he goes into the fact that Odessa tried to kill B. Clarsfield. That's the Nazi hunter that brought back Klaus Barbie, July 5th, 1979, when the car was blown up. The Odessa kills people, tried to blow the Clarsfields apart in 1979. In the political realm, Skorzeny contributed to neo-Nazism. His Odessa members contribute funds to politics. They get influential positions. Terrorism, the Skorzeny syndrome, is flourishing in the modern world, which is a reminder that Hitler and Nazism are taking their toll more than three decades after the Third Reich, he says, collapsed. It never did collapse. It continued, changed office numbers. That's where I don't agree with Mr. Infield. But he's talking about the importance of the Skorzeny. Now, taking Helene von Damme's career, I did what I love to do in the way of charting now. I take these large accounting books and I put the years of her activities, and I did an overlay of Helene Von Dahm's years of where she was and what cities and her position. And then I did Otto von Bolschwing, because she ends up in Sacramento with Otto von Bolschwing, and he took over the Reinhard Gehlen position in when Gehlen went on to have his own operation in West Germany. Reinhard Gehlen, from 1945, from May of 1945, just when the war was winding down, until 1956, worked with the United States. And then Gehlen opened up in West Germany his own operation, hiding from the Russians all this time, but setting up our National Security Council and CIA. And another person important to the career of Helene Von Dahm is William Clark, who now has the large job of head of our National Security Agency. He's the chief of the National Security Agency, and his life and Helene's and von Bolschwing overlay, and I believe they are Odessa and Gehlen agents. Now, Otto von Bolschwing set up TCI that I've done broadcasts about, and we'll do some more on that and her relationship to that organization. He set that up, and he meets up with her in Sacramento after Mr. William Clark has put her on the staff as the secretary to Ronald Reagan. In 1933, von Bolschwing was in the Nazi Party. Then he was in Palestine and Romania transferring wealth of Jews whose money was taken. They were ready to be wiped out, transferring the capital out of Europe. Von Bolschwing was with William Donovan of the OSS in 1939. He was a member of the SS. He joined the SS in 1940 and was with Donovan in 1939. And 1943 and 44, he started working in the OSS, United States, and the SS, Hitler's SS, simultaneously. And he worked with the United States Army until he came to the United States in 1954. Otto von Bolschwing was working with the United States Army. 1955, he comes to the United States. And in 1955, William Clark is military intelligence, counterintelligence in Europe, marrying a Czechoslovakian woman. And in that interim, when the war is over, von Bolschwing is working with our government. Gehlen is working with our government. Gehlen is setting up his organization. And in 1955, William Clark is in Europe, as I say, marrying this woman from Czechoslovakia. He's in counterintelligence. Otto is coming to the United States, to New York, and Gehlen is now having his own German offices. And in Germany, a woman named Helene Winter, she's born in Austria, the birthplace of the Nazi Party, of Peter Drucker, of Otto Skorzeny, a who's who of European fascism and Nazism, a hotbed of the heart of Nazism. Helene Winter marries a GI, and his name is not in these articles, but in one story, she's Helene McDonald. So I imagine the man she married is McDonald, unless that was, I don't think it was an alias, but she probably worked under Ronald Reagan as McDonald until she became Von Dahm and married a German banker. She marries a GI, and she marries a fellow from the same army company as Byron Leeds, the man that she married last year, who's going back to Vienna with her. So in Germany is Helene and a GI, and that was a very common way to come to this country, to bring somebody with you, a wife, and she automatically becomes a citizen. Before he marries her, she marries him, she leaves Vienna and goes to Sweden. And in my letter to the congressional committees, I asked the question, who did she see in Sweden? Was she already part of the Gehlen group when he opens his own offices in 1956, and she goes to Sweden and Germany and marries a GI? Now, Axel Wenner Grin was the notorious richest man in the world, gave billions to Hitler out of Sweden. That's the Electrolux person. Grin worked with Dr. Urban and with Errol Flynn. Axel Wenner Grin worked with them when Errol Flynn was making the movies with Ronald Reagan. So there was a web here out of the Swedish group, and it also involved the Duke and Duchess of Windsor down the Bahamas and a network of spies, international spies. But out of Sweden, there was a Karl Heinz Kramer, who I don't know yet if this is the brother of Fritz Kramer, a German-English spy who worked with Himmler and Himmler's masseuse and with Alan Dulles and Mr. Carl Wolf and the CIA, later the CIA, but worked. He's a shipbuilder now in Sweden. But he worked with the Nazis and with Alan Dulles when he was in the OSS. And Carl Fritz Kramer is up in Sweden. Now, that doesn't mean the whole country is Nazi, but she went from Austria. Looking at where she ended up, you have to look at where she was. So she was in Austria. Then she's in Sweden. And did she get any indoctrination or training there? And then she went to Germany. What was she doing in Germany? Did she know Reinhard Gehlen? She's marrying American GI, and she's going to marry another one from the same company, both stationed in Germany. Were they military intelligence? And what, if anything, was their relationship to Otto von Bolschwing? Now, he worked with Gehlen and the CIA over there, and he arrives in the United States in 1955 and is in New York, and then he's in New Jersey, and he begins right away working for Warner Lambert and Elmer Bobst. The political chemistry, Warner Lambert's the company, Elmer Bobst is the man behind the career of Richard Nixon's ascendancy to the presidency. And, of course, without Richard Nixon and that team, we wouldn't have Ronald Reagan following behind them. And she comes, marries the GI and comes to the United States. What happened in Germany? Were the husbands in military intelligence, Byron Leeds, and what were they doing in Germany in 1959? In the Army, because, you see, Byron Leeds wasn't in business. He was in the Army when she met her husband who brought her here. Now, she goes to Detroit, Michigan in 1959 as a secretary. Detroit is also the home, I mentioned, of Ford Motor Company and General Motors, the largest corporate links to the Nazi Germany before the war, during the war, after the war. And Bishop Valerian Trifia, V-A-L-E-R-I-A-N-T-R-I-F-A, the most notorious Nazi criminal in the United States outside of Mr. Arturkovich down in Seal Beach. He was brought to the United States by von Bolschwing into Detroit, and Helene von Damme is going to be working with TCI, von Bolschwing's corporation. They're both going to be living in Sacramento. So did she know Trivia? Did she know the von Bolschwing network? Because she goes to Detroit, and she gets immediately into far right-wing American politics, the radical right wing of it, and then from Detroit goes to Chicago, Illinois. By 1965, she has divorced the man who brought her to this country. That marriage was 59 to 65. And now she's in Detroit, in Chicago. And she, at the American Medical Association meeting, is where Ronald Reagan, who's going to run for governor of California, is speaking. Now, there were some well-known links, the AMA. One is Elmer Bobst, who's very active, who was the cover for Otto von Bolschwing, the medical unit that was the cover for his espionage activities. And there's Dr. Loyal Davis, Nancy Reagan's father, a very far-right conservative in Chicago. And she has very close links to the Vatican, and every major appointment has been a Catholic, either a knighted Sovereign Military Order of Malta or a Catholic. And one-third of the ones that are notorious are part of the Odessa or the assassination teams and the going back to the OSS or the current Watergate scandals. And her appointments have been disastrous, but preponderance of Catholics that were in the forefront of trouble. I haven't studied the ones that didn't make waves, but in the research of political assassinations or Nazi networks, she put into office, and I'll name some of those. So she's in the city where the Continental Illinois Bank is that combines with Michael Sindona and David Kennedy, Secretary of the Treasury, and Cardinal Cody, and Paul Marcinkus, and there's a certain route of the Odessa that I mentioned in regards to the Gulf and Western story, the Odessa network, coming from Germany or Vienna, and one of those countries in Germany or Vienna, Frankfurt, or there were specific cities, whether it's Berlin or Frankfurt or Munich, and Vienna, coming to the United States, going to Detroit and going to New Jersey, I told you before, tapping Houston or tapping Chicago, and then getting about their little business, okay? Now, she hears Ronald Reagan, and she goes to California. She's working, helping campaign for Percy, an extension of the man whose closest contacts, the Rockefellers, had brought in these Nazis, like von Bolschwing and Trifia. Those are the ones they brought in. And later, she is politically to be wrapped up with those people like J. Peter Grace and the notorious I.G. Farben, connection, so that she has no disregard for those people, and her appointments are linked directly to them. So she comes out to California, and she marries a man when she's working for Ronald Reagan, Christian von Damme. Now, when she marries Christian Von Dohm, she's working for Ronald Reagan, and she gets onto the Reagan offices by William Clark, who had been over in Europe in counterintelligence. Just when Galen's to splinter his group and Von Wolschring's to come to the United States, Helene is brought to Ronald Reagan by William Clark. Now, it is exactly 8:30. We're going to take a one-minute break and go on to the saga of Helene Von Dohm.